Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Time to crack open the cover on a brand new edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This one for August 2020. Do you believe it's August 2021 already? Wow. Summer's flying by, but it sure is hot. Proud of the peanut is what it says on the cover. In the sandy soil of the coastal plain, North Carolina farmers harvest more than 400 million pounds of peanuts a year. Plus, from North Carolina to everywhere, that's going to be a full day's worth of an issue. I'll tell you that. I took a look at it. Lots of little articles about little places. Local landmarks on the National Register. A hardware store built by North Wilkesboro and East Fork Pottery in Asheville, and more, if we can get to all of them. There is a bottle of Pepsi Cola on the cover. It says, Sparkling Pepsi Cola Reg U.S. Pat Off. I remember as a kid trying to figure out what all that meant. 12 fluid ounces. And on the peanut bowl, there's some text written on the cover. It says, Peanuts and Pepsi, two of our greatest exports, are best enjoyed together. Let's see if Elizabeth has anything to say about that in her From Elizabeth column, Summer's Last Stand. By August, we'd surrendered, succumbed to the steam and swelter of a late southern summer. And no amount of frozen zero candy bars doled out at the Memorial Park swimming pool in Asheboro could cool us down. We hot-footed around that concrete deck, bouncing on tiptoes to keep from scorching our heels, before diving into water that had gone lukewarm, until we finally just gave up, headed home, and retreated to the backyard, a place where we could still find respite from the baking heat. There, we could lounge beneath the outstretched limbs of a black walnut tree, just like the one I sprawled under at my grandmother's house, spreading out one of her quilts to shield my bare legs against the prickle of the brittle grass. If you were in the East, maybe you found your relief under the broad, five-lobed leaves, a giant's hand of a massive sycamore. If you were in the West, maybe under the canopy of a white oak, the venerable fixture shading an old home place. If the first part of summer was to embrace warmth, at the beach, at a pool, our faces turned toward the sun, the second half of the summer was to let it go. We said our goodbyes to the beach, pocketing seashells to bring home and line up on the windowsill as proof that we'd been somewhere. We watched honeysuckle and magnolia and Confederate jasmine and purple irises bloom and then fade. The strawberries were long gone, and the soft-shell crabs were dwindling, but there were still plenty of tomatoes for sandwiches, still peaches and watermelon, shockingly cold, eaten straight from the refrigerator. Instead of welcoming the heat, we chased the chill. We made creamy icebox pies with lemons and buttermilk and ate cold salads for supper, chicken, shrimp, three-bean, macaroni, potato. We sat for hours in front of the fan, the kind with metal blades, talking into it, making robot voices for our afternoon entertainment. We jumped to the chance to make one last right-before-school-starts trip to Carowinds, where we rode the powder keg log flume over and over, just to be drenched with water at the end of the ride. On Sundays, we climbed into the back seat of the car for a ride along the Blue Ridge Parkway, All of the windows rolled down, arms brandished out and waving in mountain air that felt 15 degrees cooler than back home. We stood under waterfalls, no longer bone-shatteringly icy, but at last just right. We ducked underground into the cooling caves of Linville Caverns. We took to the trails and sought out creeks and streams, stripping off our shoes and socks to wade, to splash in the cool water before the season was over, before it would be in time, in a few months, to wish for warmth. Okay, so much for the musical interlude. I finally found the article and the photo essay. I usually mark it each week with a piece of paper, and I failed to do that, so I've been searching. And guess what it's on? You remember the cover? No, not the Pepsi part. Peanuts! Get your peanuts! Boiled, brittled, or bagged at the ballpark. There's a peanut for practically every time and place. We're proud that so many of them come from eastern North Carolina, ranked fifth in the nation for peanut production, where a whole lot of legumes find purchase in our sandy soil. Written by Katie Singh. Deep roots. It's hard to imagine a time when peanuts weren't deeply entwined with our landscape and our lives. Native to South America, they likely arrived here with enslaved Africans in the 18th century. The nickname goober may derive from the Bantu word niguba. By the early 1800s, some North Carolinians were growing peanuts commercially, but the crop didn't really catch on until the Civil War, when soldiers and civilians alike found relief from food shortages in goober peas. That appreciation carried on through the 20th century as North Carolina's peanut industry grew. Today, local farmers produce more than 200,000 tons of the legumes each year. Oh, we have some old pictures on this page. You can tell by the color. This is a sepia tone. That would be a brownish, brown on brown, I guess you'd call it, or brown on tan. In the old days, growers like Harry Robertson, farming in the Martin County community of Gold Point around 1940, dug up their peanuts and stacked them around poles to dry. So here's old Harry. Now, remember, this is 1940, so of course he has on a suit and a tie and a hat. And he's standing there with his hands folded in front of him at his waist. He's leaning up against this big stack of peanuts that have been on their vines. They have been stacked around a pole. And in the background, the empty rows where they used to grow, and more pole after pole after pole as we go down the row. And down below is a picture of a man who is picking up all of the peanut vines on a pitchfork and tossing them into some kind of a machine, which may be separating them away from the vine. Not sure. It's on the right-hand side page, there's a big close-up color picture of peanuts growing on the vine. And it says, now at harvest time, modern farmers turn over the peanut plants, leaves on the ground and pods in the air, and let them dry in rows. Overleaf planting. Each May, farmers in eastern North Carolina carry on a deeply held tradition, planting more than 100,000 acres of sandy soil across our coastal plain with the seeds that will become the season's peanut crop. The majority of that acreage is devoted to the Virginia variety, the large, flavorful ballpark peanuts that are sold with their shells intact. Some goes toward runner peanuts, smaller and often used to make peanut butter. 30 to 40 days after planting, a butter yellow flower blooms, then produces pegs that migrate back into the soil. There in the ground, the tips of those pegs take on the familiar shape of the legumes we know and love. And here's a gentleman. He is pouring peanuts into a seeding machine. There's a whole bunch of rows of yellow buckets filled to the top. He's working on the middle one now. He's done the first two. And they're going to be hauled behind a tractor and dispensed in the rows to grow for the next season. There is a hand holding a peanut. It says, what looks like a snack is also the seed that will grow new legumes. In Windsor, Clint Thompson, a local grower for the Bertie County Peanuts, fills the planter that will disperse seeds throughout the field. How about digging? By mid-September, several months after the crop is planted, it's time to begin the harvesting process. Farmers drive their tractors down leafy green rows, towing a machine called a digger, which pulls the peanuts out of the ground, shakes off the dirt, and inverts the plants. When they're first removed from the soil, the pods are too moist to go straight into the storage. So now, freed from the earth, they remain in the field for a few days, lined up in windrows, curling in the sunshine and warm air of early fall. And the farmer is probably hoping that it doesn't rain. A digger pulled by a tractor plucks peanuts from the dirt, leaving them to dry in fluffy windrows, as shown on the right and down here below. We see the tractor pulling through the center. And, of course, you know, the wheels on the tractor are designed to just span the rows so they don't squash anything. And you can see there's some kind of a plowing device which is pushing them up, and then some arms in the back which are diverting them in probably in the process turning them over to remain upside down. And this picture, when it referred to the windrows, is an aerial picture, drone picture, who knows, of green row after row after row after row after row. And down in the bottom part, that looks different because they've gone through and they have turned up the roots skyward, so it's not green, it's brown, and the rest of it is all green, these very, very even. It looks like a close-up of, say, a corduroy pants or something like that, but there's a green tractor towing a blue device, which is turning these rows over, just coming in from the right side, so we can see how that happens. And then there's threshing and curing. After the peanuts have dried in their rows, a combine removes the pods from the vines, collecting the former in a hopper and returning the latter to the field. The peanuts are placed into drying wagons where they continue to cure. When they're dry enough to be safely stored, they're sold to shellers and processors, well on their way to ballpark snacks, peanut brittle, and much more. And here's a gentleman who, by the look of his long white beard, has been doing this for a long time. He's got overalls and straps over his shoulders and a pretty old ball cap on his head. And he has a big shovel. It looks like one of those coal shovels. You know, it's basically rectangular and deep. And he is spreading the peanuts out on the back of a truck here that's being trailer, a very tall trailer, tall as he is. He's standing way up on top, but it's got all of those peanuts in it. The caption says, after the peanuts dry in the fields, they're separated from the vines and stored in trailers to cure further. Farmer Patrick Hoggard levels out his harvest. This is a double-page spread, a lot of pictures here. It says, a legacy of legumes. Bob Allsbrook's roots run deep in Halifax County, where his family's company, A&B Milling, opened as a feed and seed store in 1945. At the time, the town of Enfield was said to be the world's largest producer of raw peanuts. Its peanut festival began in 1937, and although that's no longer the case, the Allbrooks uphold the tradition with Aunt Ruby's Peanuts, named for Bob's mother. The success of Aunt Ruby's mail order business means that the family sends North Carolina peanuts all over the country and welcomes visitors who detour off I-95 to buy snacks straight from the source. And a further caption says, Bob Alsbrook says that the jacket hanging in the lobby of his company, Aunt Ruby's Peanuts, was made from burlap sacks by a farmer friend about 30 years ago. It was hot, he says, but you got a lot of attention when you wore it. So here he is wearing some khaki pants and a black shirt with Aunt Ruby's Peanuts stenciled into it, and this white-haired gentleman is looking up at us against a wall, which is white brick on the lower part and then painted brick above. It's brown, and it's some stalks where the peanuts are growing, and a couple of large peanuts behind him. And here's that jacket. Sure does look hot, but on the pockets, they've got the text that was on the burlap sacks. It says North Carolina Shelled Peanuts, A and B Milling Company, one in each side of these large pockets. So yes, I'm sure he did get attention. Down below, everything is stacked up in different colored cans, and I suppose that represents variations in how they were packaged, whether they were salted or light salt or maybe a little sugar or honey or something like that attached. On the right-hand side, it says, to make Aunt Ruby's country-style peanuts, gallons of legumes are blanched, soaked, and fried. After they cool, the freshly cooked and salted peanuts are packaged in the company's signature tin cans. And they show some pictures here. It says soak. And this looks like, they look like peanuts that have gone into a little pond or something like that, because they're all wet on the left side and they're sinking down there. So that's the soaking part. Then fry, and we can see it looks like the traditional fryers that you'd see in a McDonald's or something like that, that you dip them down in there, let them fry a little bit, and then pull it up and the fat drips right through the grate. Number three is cool, and we see several metal racks, and they're all spread out one or two layers deep to cool, and then finally packaged. They're rolling off the end of those racks into the cans. Different subject, baseball's best friend. Across the state, pitchers wind up on the mound, and vendors law bags of peanuts into the stands, like at Granger Stadium in Kinston, where fans of the Down East Wood Ducks crack open Houston's peanuts from Bladen County town of Dublin. We're reminded of the partnership between peanuts and baseball, a tradition that dates to the 1890s. During every seventh inning stretch, when we sing, take me out to the ball game, as if we could ever forget. As the game wears on deep into a sultry afternoon or a dusky evening, those big round peanuts are with us until they're not. Until all that's left is a pile of shells crunching underfoot. They're at 400 East Granger Ave in Kinston, MILB.com/down-east. And Major League Snacks, Cubs and Tigers, Cardinals and Orioles, Pirates and Padres, and plenty more Major Baseball League teams boast specially branded bags of peanuts. The source of those snacks found around the country? Hampton Farms, headquartered in Northampton County town of Severn. Since the Barnes family began farming peanuts in 1917, the company has grown into a leading roaster of in-shell peanuts and the largest supplier to baseball stadiums. They're at HamptonFarms.com. We see on the left-hand side a baseball field and the sky behind it, and all of the billboards around the field as seen through a protective net so the people in the stands don't get bonked by one of those miscreant balls that's been struck backwards, because they're behind the home plate here. And a young man is standing up with a big smile on his face, and someone has just tossed him a bag of peanuts, and it is about to land right in his hand. And here's somebody else wearing a Cubs uniform, young boy, as seen from the up above him, because all we can see, we can't see his face, we just see his red cap, and he's got a bag of Houston's roasted peanuts lying on the grass as he's stretched out with his legs spread slightly apart, leaning up against his leg, and his baseball mitt is off to his side. Now about boiled treasure. Distinctly southern and a little bit elusive, boiled peanuts are a rare treat. A hand-painted sign on the side of the road might inspire a sudden detour, or you might already know exactly where to turn off U.S. Highway 64 to find them, plain or Cajun style, at Mackey's Ferry Peanuts and Gifts. The shop opened in 1983, now owned by Sharon and Chris Smith. It remains a favorite stop for families headed to and from the beach. Regulars know that when they peel away the shiny shells, they'll find a different side of the familiar legume. Soft, savory, and just this sigh of beans. They're on U.S. Highway 64 in Jamesville. MFPNuts.com. Picture here, we can see the shiny shells because they've been boiled, and then we see one of them is open, and we see three peanuts inside this one, and then we see a bowl of nothing but empty shells. The outside of Mackey's Ferry Peanuts, Jamestown, North Carolina, established 1983, says the sign and the text I just read to you. And there is some old farm equipment stacked up outside on the porch. There's a man in a rocker chair outside. His yellow sign that says, "Yes, we are open." And it looks like a thermometer on the door, and I'll bet it has a high temperature reading. Peanut pride. For most North Carolinians, Bertie County and peanuts are an immediate association. Calling to mind big, clear jars of that show-off-the-spicy wasabi and soy or sweet honey-roasted peanuts inside. Yet for the company that put Bertie on the map, snacks were a happy accident. For years, Jack Powell Jr. blister-fried peanuts in his popcorn popper for clients of Powell and Stokes, the farm supply business that his family started in 1915. Powell's peanuts were so popular that in 1992 he decided to sell them. And then, to give his corner of Northeast North Carolina a boost, he put it right on the label, Bertie County Peanuts. They're on Highway 13 North in Windsor, peanuts.net. The caption says, over the years, Windsor-based Bertie County Peanuts has expanded its offerings to include sweet treats like peanut brittle. It's stacked up here. There's five pieces of it. It's a golden brown color, and you can see the peanuts just embedded there in the sticky old brittle. Watch your fillings, folks. Spread it on thick. A peanut butter sandwich takes you back, doesn't it? Close your eyes, and you're in the cafeteria, opening your lunchbox or brown bag with anticipation. But a peanut butter sandwich is also timeless, a simple pleasure at any age. Southerners may be less inclined to agree on the perfect pairing, classic PB&J or an old-school slather of Duke's Mayo. To satisfy North Carolinians' demand, Winston-Salem-based Lowe's Foods annually grinds 11,000 pounds, that's 5.5 tons, of peanuts to make their peanut butter, which is pictured here. And some stores let you make your own. At 16 Lowe's Food locations across the state, a row of red grinders turns Hampton Farm peanuts into bread's favorite spread. Lowe'sFoods.com, here is peanut butter smeared on a piece of white bread, and right across the middle is a bunch of crunched up peanuts. Well, I guess that's my cue to right on time to come back to you with something more from the magazine before it's time to go. And since we're doing pictures today, I'm going to go to that section in the front. It's right after the little editorial there that I read to you earlier. It says, "Welcome home, August. Striking beauty." And then it's got a bunch of the article titles that we're going to have here. But here is a full-page picture. It says, "Summer days bring mighty storms to Outer Banks towns like Duck, with powerful lightning illuminating the sky like a strobe light." And what we have here is a purple sky. all the way from the waterline way to the top. I would call this varying shades of purple, sort of what I would call a violet at the bottom, getting to a deeper purple at the top, and it's shot across some seagrass, which is close up in our face from the photographer's lens, slightly out of focus, but not really very much. And then it extends into a body of water, and at the other side of the water is more land, and then the sky. And in the sky, we have lightning both vertical and horizontal. The vertical stroke on the left-hand side has a big jag to the left in it, and then it comes back, and it has some little tendrils that stick out of it. Then it goes behind a cloud, and then it goes all the way to the ground. In the middle of the page, all across from one side to the other, it looks like a map from space of rivers, because they are very, very thin. They're white against the purple sky, and there's no center line that connects every single one of them, but they just have just going crazy up there with all of these little electrical strikes. Overleaf, we have a double page. This one says Golden Hour, Andrews. Each North Carolina sunset is a little different. In small mountain towns like Andrews, summer evenings before nightfall are unforgettable. The grass turns from green to gold, mountain ranges are cast into darkness and light, and the old barns scattered across our rolling western landscape are given a brief spotlight, serving as a reminder of the rich agricultural tradition that exists and prevails in Appalachia. Beautiful farm scene here. In the foreground, running from the lower right to off the left-hand side, is a gravel road. It has grass on each side and a strip of grass down the middle. And the only reason you see the path, I suppose, where the tires are is because somebody keeps driving through there, and that grass just doesn't get to expand. And on either side of that, we have a fence. It's not a chain link fence, but it is the type of a fence that you might find on a farm. Some 6 foot high or 5 foot high posts. And then this, they're big, like 4 inch squares of wire that connect vertically and horizontally. Big farmhouse in the left side, beautifully mowed, or I don't know whether it's by man or animal, field in here. And then another fence, and then a rougher field, and then another fence, and then another field, and then into the distance, the hills rise up, the low hills in someplace in North Carolina. And the last picture is Duke Gardens, what was now a sprawling 55-acre natural wonderland in the heart of Durham's Duke University, was once a simple iris garden that Sarah P. Duke commissioned in 1934. That original garden has grown into what is now the South Lawn, where visitors can walk through the terraces, taking in a dazzling array of flora on their way to the fish pond just below. A couple of tall arborvitae here, some steps up between them, a gravel path, and a ton of flowers. A beautiful place to visit. Well, that, my friends, is all we have for this week's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you will be sure to listen next time. I am Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and also on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.